So our next speaker is going to be Dr. Mark Rosegrant. He's Director of the Environment and Production Technology Division of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington. His PhD is in public policy from the University of Michigan, has over 30 years of experience in research and policy analysis in agriculture and economic development, with an emphasis on water resources and other critical natural resources and agricultural policy issues as they impact food security for us. He currently directs research on climate change. Well, there's quite a few things here, actually. Climate change, water resources, sustainable land management, genetic resources, and biotechnology, and agriculture and energy. Just not a lot left there. So he's author of, or editor of, 7 books, published over 100 papers in refereed journals. He's currently a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and was elected a distinguished fellow of the American Agricultural Economics Association. So, Mark.
Thanks very much. I'm going to also kind of try to get through quickly a lot of material here. What I want to talk about is what is going to be the impact of rising energy prices and rising demand for energy in the future on the agricultural sector. And I'll talk about some of the linkages first between energy and agriculture. Then I'll go through some future demand trends and projections for the energy sector. And then using those, run a number of scenarios of how future energy demand will influence food price and food security, and then run through a few policy conclusions. Providing just a little bit of context to start with, obviously we all know world energy prices have increased rapidly in recent years, or down a bit now just because of the economic recession, but we'll see prospects for continued increases. During that same time, agriculture has become much more energy intensive. And of course, we see the use of energy in many ways in agriculture, for diesel fuel and gasoline, for tillage, planting, transportation, and harvesting, electricity, LPG, and gas and natural gas in irrigation, livestock and poultry and dairy facilities, on-farm processing and storage of perishable commodities. And also, it runs directly through in terms of increased cost of fertilizer and pesticides. If we look at energy as a share of production costs, and this is an example from the United States, looking at energy costs as a share of total operating costs of different types of farms in the U.S., you see for the big ticket items like wheat and corn, energy accounts for as much as 50% and more of the total operating costs of farms, and other commodities like rice, sugar beets, peanuts, and cotton are not that far behind. It's 20 to 40%, pretty much across the board. I think what's somewhat less known is that energy costs have risen very dramatically in the developing world as well. Here's just an example from Vietnam, from some work we've done, where, as you can see, for maize productions, it's as high as 20% already in Vietnam. Rice, 12 to 13%. Vegetables and coffee as much as 10%. So it's not just a developed world phenomenon. Developing countries, if you look at China or the high intensity areas of India, those percentages are going to be even much higher than what you see here. So how do these rising costs affect agriculture? Well, it follows directly. It's pushing up the cost of production, transport, and processing. At the same time, the costs are going up. That's making biofuel more profitable. So we're seeing increasing amounts of agricultural land diverted to biomass-based renewable energy, particularly biofuels. It's very likely that a number of other technologies will come forward in the future requiring that will also compete with agriculture. On somewhat more positive potential of higher cost is that it could induce changes in crop patterns, in some cases to more energy efficient crops, and also induce breeding for those kinds of crops. And hopefully will also increase the use of energy saving management practices, such, for example, given the incentives that are needed to exploit the kinds of opportunities that Amit Roy told us about for fertilizers, but also in other areas in conservation tillage that reduces the use of plows and tractors. Lower water use in irrigation, and as we said, better nitrogen management. impacts on the water sector, I think, could be very, very interesting, and again, could be partly positive. I mean, to start with, of course, there's going to be increased cost of water extraction, conveyance, and desalination. But that, I think, potentially could lead to a drive for more efficient water allocation mechanisms. So, again, to help incentivize the kinds of changes that we heard could be coming in Alberta. And also in both domestic, urban, and in agriculture would lead to reduction in water losses and leaks. Higher demand for electric power is going to throw another factor into the equation that potentially we could see, again, a return to some additional building of larger dams in the developing world in particular, that could be partly for agriculture but also for power. So again, with significant potential environmental impacts. Another area is that this is going to increase the cost of subsidizing water services. If we look at not only the United States, but countries like India and Mexico, there's very large subsidies on water, where water is in effect allowed to be used for free. If with these continuing increases in energy costs, I think there's going to be strong incentives for governments to get out of, or at least reduce the need the use of subsidizing water services. But maybe I'm too optimistic, but I think there's potential there. Just one very interesting example, I think, that shows the scope for the potential here. In Texas, water pump for irrigation decreased by almost 18% between a low natural gas prices to a high natural gas price here. So there's very strong incentives if they're actually realized and put to the farmers. Energy prices tend to be driving agriculture input prices. You can see here the almost one-to-one correspondence between the price of urea and the price of crude oil. And now increasingly, as we move into the bioenergy era, oil prices and world food prices seem to be very closely co-determined. As you see here, the red line here is average oil prices, the blue line is food prices. But they track very closely, again, with the in a large part due to the impact of input prices, but also due to the impact on profitability of biofuel production. So let's look a little bit more into the future. We're all hoping for better use of renewables, but as you can see here, the fact that the world has been up through recent years, that by far the most energy is going to come from the oil, coal, and gas. Biomass is fairly significant. It's the green segment there. Then hydro and other renewables, as you can see, are just tiny. So despite work on solar and other things, they've barely entered into the mix. And that's going to continue under most sort of business as usual scenarios. So now let me get into looking now at some formal scenarios for the future. First, look at the International Energy Agency's energy demand outlooks. I'll just highlight a couple of them here. One is the current policy scenario, which basically continues the energy sector policies we have now. A new policy scenario brings us partway to policies that would reduce greenhouse gas emissions and begin to phase out fossil energy subsidies. And then a more radical, environmentally friendly scenario is the 450 scenario, which is an energy pathway consistent with the goal of 2-degree temperature increase by 2050 through limitation of greenhouse gases. How do these play out in terms of long-term energy prices? Well, as you can see, the current policy scenario, which is red here, beginning in about 2010 there, leads to significant increases. This is in energy demand. Increases in energy demand go up. The blue scenario reduces it from 1.4% per year to 1.2%. And then the greener 450 scenario gets it to 0.7%. A couple things to note here. That China alone accounts for 20% of projected growth, and developing countries for 60%. You see the same thing happening with prices, of course, as demand goes up much faster than the current policies. It also drives policies up to as much as $150 per barrel by 2035. And if you look at the 450s an hour, by contrast, that can end up dampening prices so that they stay at about the levels now. Let's skip that one. But let's look at then at how those particular scenarios, together with a couple of scenarios we do on biofuels, impact on food prices and food security. I think the first thing to notice is, and this is not going to be using IFPRI's impact model, which is a global model of agriculture, covering all 115 countries and regions, 46 commodities, and estimating long-term supply and demand based on population, income, prices, and a number of other factors. And one thing to notice is that we project, even under the base, under a baseline scenario, which is our best assessment of what happens in agriculture, we're expecting significant continued increases in real-world food prices. You see it here, over 50% for maize, 30% for wheat, nearly 30% for rice. So we think, in fact, the days of long-term declines in world food prices really are over because of the number of factors that are limiting supply growth, while demand remains robust. Under the baseline, you see very poor performance in terms of improving food security. And here we see, looking at the number of malnourished children, developing countries as a whole between 2010 and 2050, we see a decline of only about 30 million. And that's progress, but it's very poor progress compared to the kind of goals we saw from the Millennium Development Goals to try to halve malnutrition by 2015. So that's not happening. In Sub-Saharan Africa, there's almost no progress at all throughout the 2050. So let's now look compared to that baseline at four scenarios. One is that IEA 450. Another, we simulate higher energy prices of that IEA one. And then we're doing one where what happens if biofuel technology does not develop so that we maintain much longer term dependence on the sort of corn ethanol and other crop ethanol instead of transferring out of somewhat less competitive ones. But finally, we look at what happens if there's high energy prices, but we also have higher productivity growth in the future due to investment, much enhanced investment in agriculture research and others. So let's see what happens in world food prices relative to that baseline that I showed you, 2050. So this is already, these are on top of the increases that we already showed you. As you can see, one thing is green scenarios like IEA 450 do, however, still result in higher prices because you are pulling some land out of production, you're reducing the use of inputs in agriculture. So you do end up with higher input prices under those, and you're substituting biomass for fossil fuels. So as you see, on the main crops, you get about 6 to 14%, but on dry products like soybean oil or rapeseed oil, you're getting very large increases in prices due to competition for energy demand. Similar effects for higher energy prices, those do drive up the prices of the food commodities. And then even more dramatic is what happens if we don't see a transformation out of crop-based ethanol and biofuels into second and third generation. You see very high prices increases there. But things are not, it doesn't have to be a terrible outcome if we are willing to invest in higher productivity. It's just one example here with the higher productivity growth does result in considerably lower prices than if you have the high energy prices alone. So that situation can become quite worrisome under these kind of technological kind of options. But technology, if deployed correctly, can in fact make a lot of difference. In addition to higher prices, you end up with more land use. So you can see, for example, if we look at maize across the way, you get 4% more maize area, 6% under the first one, then 6%, and then 7% more. And that land is basically coming, in most cases, from less favorable areas or from conversion of forests. So that, in addition to higher prices under these energy scenarios, you're also going to be converting land that you'd rather not be converted. Impacts on malnutrition also end up being negative, ranging from almost 3 million additional malnourished children under the IEA 450 scenario, up to nearly 5 million more in 2050 under the biotechnology pessimistic. But again, there is that hope that if policies and investments and productivity go up, you can counterbalance some of these effects. Let me just run very quickly through some of the other implications. Obviously, we see rising energy prices and biofuel demand is going to lead to likely lead to higher agriculture prices and pressure on the system. It can also increase opportunities in the ag sector for the to the poor in particular if done correctly, but has also potential threats to natural resources, including land conversion, also results in more water use. But again, that trade-off between higher energy prices or higher biofuels can be reduced if we have innovations in technology investments and productivity, or and can move away from the high use of crop ethanol. So improvements in biofuel conversion and crop productivity reduce the trade-offs, and biofuels we hope will increase the profitability of crop breeding to get into not only in the biofuel sector, but in food in general. Just my last, I think two slides here, be right out of your way. In fact, I'll just skip that one. That's a little details on the biofuel sector. But I think the core overall is not to focus only on that on the energy crops and biofuel sector, but you have to focus on broad-based agriculture productivity growth. And that comes from crop breeding, including biotechnology, that's going to target abiotic and biotic stresses. But it also very much is about the kind of management that we heard the first two speakers talk about in terms of precision agriculture and fertilizers, much more efficient use of water, lower tillage, integrated soil fertility management. But also, so in the developing world, has to be accompanied by massive increases in rural infrastructure investment to improve access to markets, to risk insurance, credit inputs, and mobile phones and market information. Thank you.